Welcome to episode 122 of Valpe Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English language Valpe Stuttgart fan podcast where reviews are unofficial, uninformed, usually unprepared. My name is Travis. You can reach me at Hazelfish. His name is Matt. You can reach him at Cellracer. Ted, you can reach at Valpe Teddy. Here's the thing, guys. I want to talk to you about Ted. I'll start with you. Is that the Augsburg tradition is where they hand out a marionette before the match starts. I mean, what is your favorite in America? It's Sesame Street. It's the Muppets. What was your favorite kind of a puppet?
I would go the count from Sesame Street. How many goals have Seru and Dennis scored?
That's so good. Matt, it's going to be a tough one to beat. What do you got?
The count is an excellent choice, but I'm going to beat him with two because you can't have one without the other. Statler and Waldorf from The Muppet Show.
Oh,
the balcony hecklers, absolute legends.
Here we go. Shout out. So Kevin Hatchard, who just did a great job, he got 9 out of 25. So he's staying out of the cliches. Pod predictions. We all went 5-4, but Jeff went 4-5. So Matt, this is big. Jeff is 7 up on you in this one. What's more important to you? Is it catching up to Jeff, or because Austin and Travis are 3 behind you, is it staying out of last place?
I think it's staying out of last place. I feel like a miracle would have to happen for me to catch up to Jeff. So as long as I can stay ahead of you two clowns, I'll be feeling pretty good about life.
Well, especially since Austin forgets to send in his wagers half the time. I like your odds there. OFC Fantasy, Valpe Ansbach won the week, but Village Footy has a 10-point lead with one match to go over last season's champion, Lukestadt. OFC Tippspiel, Dave won the week with 17 points, which is amazing, to secure his survival. In last place. Stefan has a 9-point lead over Kai, though, with 1 week to go. So both of those are pretty close. Ted, you're not in either of these. What is going on?
I start every season with the best of intentions, and I always sign up for OFC Fantasy. And if I make it through the Hinrunda in its entirety, I feel like I've done a good job. But inevitably, NFL American football fantasy always catches up to me and overtakes Bundesliga fantasy, and then I just stop submitting my lineups. Basically because I suck.
Yeah, there's two things here. I don't understand Bundesliga fantasy at all. And two, thank you for doing that because you're pretty much the only person I'm beating in any of this stuff. So I do appreciate that. But speaking
That's
of,
why I do it, Travis.
My self-esteem very much appreciates that. Thank you. The Valby Frauen won again. So they won not only the Pokal for Württemberg, 0-3. And I didn't really realize this. They won against the second best team in the regional league. So if you don't know, the Frauen play in the Oberliga, which is the fourth league, and they just beat up the third league team, one of the best ones in the third league. And then they came back on Sunday and destroyed on the road 6-0 against Niefer. Now, SC Sand did the same. They won 6-0. So with two matches to go, we are 2 points up on SC Sand. We play the fourth place team while they play the ninth place team. Meanwhile, the U21s had a 1-3 win against Frankfurt's second team. Hoffenheim lost at home, so they're out of it. So this comes down to us and the Kickers. The Kickers and Sasha Kalajic's brother won their match. So they play at 6th place Hamburg. We play at TSG 2, or we host them, I should say. So Kai Guy said this. He's like, quote, "I wanted to say something about the Valpe women team, which unfortunately has been neglected a bit, but is also harder to get information," which I think is true. "With the victory in the cup final, they qualified for the DFB Cup next season and could then meet a first or second division team. And with a little bit of luck and skill, they can get promoted." So, I mean, Matt, this has been your thing all year long. Give some love to the Frauen. Two big wins. I was a little bit worried about what might happen the weekend after that big Pokal win.
Every time I remember that they're playing, I rush right to Twitter, and I usually get there about an hour after the game has started, and I see that we've scored 2 or 3 goals every single time. These ladies just go out there and immediate score. And I was fortunate to see that the Pokal match had a live stream on it, so I got to watch for a little while, which was fun, even though it was in the middle of the workday here. They're just good. They're relentless. Just high pressing, pushing, forcing their opponents into mistakes. They're a lot of fun to watch. And it's just, it's so great that they're having so much success. Getting into the DFB Cup is amazing. I have complete faith that they're going to crush this weekend. And San can suck it and sit in second.
And then, Ted, Danielle Kalajic is 6'2". So he's a good 4 or 5 inches shorter than his brother. He's 23 years old. I mean, what do you think? He's one of the leading scorers for the Kickers. Should we sign this guy or just let him hang out in blue and white?
He's a striker?
Indeed he is.
Oh, have we checked the stability of this man's knees? I mean, it hinges on that. But if these knees are good, we're going to need a striker next season for Champions League. Sign him up.
Oh, man. How awesome would that be? Kalajic brothers on both sides of it. The Valpy shop, we got some flags out there. They've got a Scheisse shirt in black now. So former Valpiers, Gil and Omar were on the bench in the Polish and Turkish League. Poor Luka was on the bench in the 6-0 home loss that Darmstadt had against Hoffenheim in their last match. They've been relegated. Mo played 90 minutes in a loss in the Netherlands. Tomas Castaneris played 13 minutes in a win versus Dortmund's second team. They are being promoted, his team Ulm. Wahid is back from injury, so he played 24 minutes in a loss to Nuremberg. And Jovan Milosevic played 30 minutes in a draw for St. Gallen. Future Valpiers Justin Diehl didn't get off the – he wasn't even on the bench for Cologne in what was a huge win for them. Yannick Keitel played the entire match for Freiburg and was their second most highly rated player in Christian Streich's kind of emotional final home match. And Nick Valtamata, 2 goals last week, nothing this week, but he played 70 minutes for Werder Bremen in a match where they drew against Leipzig, which helped us because now we can finish no lower than third place. Old Valpiers Simon Terode announced his retirement, and old friend Carlo Mané put something on Instagram or Twitter or one of Facebook, MySpace, AOL, one of those things, about just how awesome it was to play with this guy. Simon scored 25 goals for us in 2016-17. He won the Golden Boot. He got us the second division title, which is the only trophy, Matt, that any of us have actually witnessed in our, let's face it, in our fandom here. So, Matt, any words on any of the guys I just mentioned, but especially Simon Terode?
Terode will eternally be a legend to me. That 16-17 season was so magical, largely because he was banging in goals like crazy, and we just hadn't seen that. In our Stuttgart fandom, we'd never had a highly effective striker. So for Terode to just be out there, and he came in as a mercenary and we knew that, but he immediately ingratiated himself to the fans, was a beloved member of the team. And I was so hopeful that he was going to keep that momentum going in the first division. And just while he could never put it in at the highest level, he was an absolute monster in the second division. And I will always love him for that 16-17 season.
He is just a legend. He's the Crash Davis of the second division Bundesliga, right? If you don't know what we mean by that, look it up online. It's a Kevin Costner film. It's almost as good as Waterworld, not quite, but he just mastered the second division. I still feel, even though he's almost closer to 40 than he is 30, Ted, that this guy can still bang some goals in. Schalke hasn't had their best season, but they are going to survive the second tier after some rough goes. Simon Terode is one of my favorite guys. I love a classic number 9. He just seems like a really good dude. He's gone through some struggles. There's nothing but praise to say for this guy. Congratulations to him. Ted, any last words for Simon as he calls it quits?
Yeah, I think he's still got it. If Hamburg knows what's good for him next season to finally get out of this fight at Bundesliga, you got to like throw up the Simon Terode bat signal and get him to come to your club. He's your ticket out potentially. So congratulations on an amazing career. Yeah, he's fantastic. And I'll also say, I saw the tweet from Carlos Mané, loved it. And I loved that. It seems like wherever that guy goes, he will always wear the Brustring and have a connection to Stuttgart. And it's like stronger than wherever he's playing. I think he's in Turkey right now, and he clearly longs to be back in Stuttgart.
Yeah, Carlos Mané said some great things. I didn't realize he's like 30 at this point. I mean, he seems like he's closer to 12 than he is there. But he's a diminutive guy, but I remember he had a great a season with him there. So Simone, congratulations on a great career. You know what? We're going to dive into the man of the match for this particular season and this particular career. So I, guys, am opening up with a, what are we having? A 9% Voodoo Ranger Imperial IPA. We've got a lot to celebrate. So you know what? It's Mother's Day. The three of us are hanging out in our basements, ignoring our wives and our moms. So let's celebrate. Ted, what are you having?
I am having a 7.2% Truth by Rheingeist, which is a local brewery down here.
Ooh, well done, Matt. How do you balance that?
I've got an amber ale from the Keweenaw Brewing Company called Red Jacket. It's a mining-themed beer, and I have no idea what the ABV on this is because I can't find it on the can.
Yeah, it's usually a good sign right there. Speaking about can't find stuff, Matt, who was your man of the match for this one before we reveal who the OFC's man of the match? Because it was actually pretty close. 47% voted for this particular guy, but it was pretty tight.
So it's really tempting to say Jirasi because he got the only goal on the day. But I'm going to go with Hirooki Ito because I thought he was just an absolute terror on defense. And I loved watching him frustrate the hell out of the Augsburg guys.
Ted?
So much like our fantasy games, I did not submit for man of the match this week because I'm a bum. But I would have probably gone with Seiru.
Yeah, I was going to go with Angelo in this one. He just seemed like he was everywhere, all over the pitch, playing defense, offense, all over the place. He had some amazing switches, which we'll talk about later. But, Ted, like usual, you are the man of the people. You nailed it, 47%. Seiru, I think now 11 or 12 matches has scored the opening goal for VfB Stuttgart, which is, among all his other records, another record there. So why don't we do it? Let's, like Seiru, open up part two. Augsburg versus Stuttgart. All right, so we went into this match and we were all super confident. We predicted 3-4 goals, and yet here's the deal. So, Matt, I'll start with you. It was a dominating performance. You know, before we dive into the match a little bit, it really was. I rewatched the match a little bit earlier today. But it was only a one-goal performance. But for a one-goal game, this was about as dominating as you can get. So even though we were all wrong on the score prediction, we were right on the domination prediction. Overall, just in a nutshell, I mean, is domination the wrong way to put this? Or what do you think?
No, I think it's one of those games where the scoreboard doesn't accurately reflect the tenor of the game. And if you look at the Fop Mob momentum chart, which has been one of our favorite things this season, it's all Stuttgart for the entire game. There's a couple little blips over to Augsburg's side. But I think the real telling item is that Augsburg's highest rated player is their goalkeeper. Yeah. And Kubek made some monster saves. He had a really good game. Hats off to him. But yeah, just... we dominated in possession. We dominated defensively, offensively. The only thing that we weren't doing enough of was putting the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, Ted, the thing that I noticed is that, and we've seen a lot this year, is Kevin Hatchard and some of the other announcers, they're diving deep into their story bag because the game is just, it's either out of hand or it's so one-sided. Even when right before Stuttgart scored that goal, they were going into a story, and I forget exactly what it was about because we were just so dominating, even though the game was 0-0. So are you with Matt and I on this one? I mean, for a 1-0 match, this was pretty one-sided.
Yeah, I think my prediction was 2-1 on this one because I thought it was going to be cagey like it was, but I was amazed looking back at the statistics how freaking dominant we were. So 77% ball possession was one statistic I saw. We had 763 passes to their 226. So, I mean, it's two very competing styles of play. And Kevin Hatchard at some point early in the match, like several times he talked about how we were just gliding through the gears. And he said something early on in the match about how Stuttgart plays like a big club, like a Champions League caliber club. And so that was one of my takeaways from the match as well. But yeah, it was a funny one. Like We totally dominated. I wish we had scored more goals, and there were some good chances in there that we'll talk about. But I don't feel like this one was ever in doubt.
It's really interesting you bring that up, because at various points during the match, they kept talking about how Augsburg is punching above their weight level, how they're upset because they had a chance for European play, but they're happy because they're not looking back at themselves on relegation zone. So, Matt, it's kind of what Ted said there, is like, this was such a one-sided match. And it's also interesting too, because when you play a Friday match, you kind of get in front of everything else there. So what are your thoughts? Do you like the Friday match? Do you not like the Friday match? Because I hosted a watch party for the Cleveland group. Friday matches stink for Americans because they start at 2:30. And as it turns out, everybody but me is working, or me and my buddy who's a teacher too, which hashtag unions. But Fridays are rough. So, I mean, Matt, are you a fan of the Friday matches or what?
I like that the Friday matches exist. I prefer that Stuttgart don't play in them. I remember 50 plus donor, his big thing was always to say, always watch the Friday matches because weird, crazy things always happen. And generally he's right, but we didn't have any weird, crazy things. And I'm a 9-to-5er, I'm a desk jockey. And like, usually my Fridays are pretty quiet. But this week I had calls at 2:30 and 3, and that made it really hard to pay attention to the game live. And what I want to gripe about real quick is, who schedules calls on a Friday afternoon? Who? Come on. But yeah, they're rough for us. I get why they're popular in Germany. I don't really know, I guess, if they are, but I could get why, like, hey, let's kick off your weekend watching a football match. But it's Saturday, Sunday, let's keep it on the weekends.
Ted, Matt is the coal miner. He's obviously the blue collar guy of us here. What are your thoughts on the Friday matches? Because as much as I want to like it, because I like knowing what's happening before the rest of the weekend happens, I'm actually coming with Matt on this one. I prefer the Saturday match, I think.
I'm right there with you. I was excited heading into this one, but my Friday ended up a little squirrely as well. And so I found that I wasn't able to pay much attention to the match as it was going along. I had it up on a computer on my desk, but I had to turn focus away from it a lot of the match. So it's tough. It's a cool concept. And I would think if you're in Germany 6 hours ahead, great way to start your weekend. And they also had, there was a national holiday in Germany on Thursday. So a lot of people take a bridge day and took Friday off as well. So this was pretty choice in that a lot of people there had a 4-day weekend. So this one would have been really ideal for our fans.
I wonder how many of our bosses are listening to this going, wait a minute. None of you actually do anything on a Friday.
Stuttgart has a soccer team? What?
Right. There's also, yeah, human resources needs to talk to you, Matt. What's going on? Let's break down the match. This will be a great thing to launch off of what Ted just said. So, Ted, we'll start with you on this one. We end with this usually. I want to start with this. Is the broadcast opened up as Kevin Hatcher was introducing the lineups, they opened up with the Scheisse song. You could hear it in the background. The 18-minute mark, there was the VfB chant. And the 60 and 67 mark, they started to do the 18-109-Dreisig song, the Scheisse song. I mean, the away crowd, Ted, dominated this match. We've seen it before. We've heard it before. We've given praise to it before. But, I mean, let's just start, instead of ending this episode, Ted, with that, is like, they were loud, and I get it's a Schwabian area, so it's a pretty easy trip, but still, that was awesome.
7,000 away fans we had there, which is fantastic. And what we can't see on the broadcast, but what I've since seen on YouTube videos afterwards, is our fans were popping flares during the opening handshakes at the match. So it's like they were in party mode from the jump.
Matt, did you hear the supporters and just any kissing up you want to do? Because hey, those guys were great.
I had to double check a couple times to make sure that this was an away game. I couldn't hear the Augsburg fans. It was all Stuttgart. And I'm starting to think maybe they're just miking up our traveling fans because they're so excitable, but that I can't understand how we dominated the sound so thoroughly in that stadium.
It was bonkers because I was watching the St. Pauli match today, Sunday, as we record this, and it wasn't nearly as loud. And I do think there is some of the miking issues, but I don't believe that every single away match that we're listening to, the broadcast crew from ESPN Plus is sitting next to the away stands. I don't think it's that, upfront, but it was kind of bizarre, but it was awesome to hear those guys. So let's dive into the match a little bit here. So, Matt, I'll start with you on this one. I'm going to do a hot take. Travis's hot take. I didn't think Leo Stergu, after his great run of form, looked super great in this match. We're going to kind of do a smorgasbord, kind of run all over this match here. So I'm just going to go with a hot take opinion right now. Leo, how do you look to you? And am I being too harsh on this one?
I thought he was fine. He didn't really stand out to me, which my mark of a defender is if you don't notice them, they're probably doing well. Because he's getting ahead of things. So I don't know. I'm not concerned about it. I didn't see him doing anything that made me scratch my head or bang my head on my desk.
Ted, were you banging your head on your desk?
I was definitely not. I thought he was inconspicuous, which was fine for me. I still think he's definitely way over a €2 million defender. So I still take the buy option on this man for sure.
Yeah, I definitely want them to add him for a depth piece. I thought he was the only guy that kind of stood out a little bit. I thought he had a couple plays where he was beaten a little bit and but for some luck or some bad finishing. But absolutely, this guy is really showing that he can be a depth guy and play in the Bundesliga. The thing I Ted, will go with you on this one is Augsburg's defense. They're always known as a defensive club, right? They always play really defensive minded. It seemed like they had five guys at the back all the time. Even if they were down a goal, they still had five guys at the back all the time. It seemed like Seiru was just blanketed with at least two guys covering him all the time. Did you see that too?
I saw that too. And oftentimes it seems like in those circumstances, you know, he can, especially if he's one-on-one, he can receive the ball, body a guy and lay it off to someone else. And it seemed like they took that option away a little bit more with him being doubled up.
So this kind of got to Matt, Jamie Levenly. He had a lot of feeds and a lot of shots that unfortunately didn't work out too much. But I guess that's part of how good this team is right now, to where they have to focus on Seiru so much. Chris has actually been kind of quiet the last few matches, and Jamie's getting a lot of play on that right side. I mean, he didn't have a lot of finishes, but Augsburg was playing five, six guys in the back.
I felt like we were trying to force it through Leveling a little bit. Augsburg was definitely in Gerasi's pocket the entire match. And that's, I mean, if you're playing against a Stuttgart team, that's a smart move. Bottle up Gerasi as best you can. I would have liked to see a little more from Undav. He had a couple good opportunities that the defense got in the way of. Leveling didn't have his best game, but he also wasn't bad.
Right.
I think he's just not, like, this was the first game where we went to him to drive the offense, and that's not something he's used to. I think as he gets a little more experience, gets used to that concept a little bit, we'll come into some games and they'll say, hey, it looks like these guys are going to try and bottle up Seiru, mess up the middle. That'll muck up Undav's plans. Like, Jamie, get ready. It might be you. Then, you know, he can prepare for that mentally. So it was weird. We have not seen a team focus this hard defensively against us in quite a while. And it's like they didn't have any intention on scoring. They were just going to try and stop us and hope for something weird to happen at the other end.
So, man, I got three things for you. One was Seiru's goal. You know, what did you think of that? Two, did you see Dennis Undav after the goal try to celebrate with one of the beer cups and his face there? And three, Enzo Milo playing as the six next to Angelo as Otta got some rest. I mean, which one of those three things sticks out to you?
I like Enzo more and more in a defensive midfielder type role, because he has that dynamic offensive capability, but he's also proven that he can be a stopper. back there. So that's better upside. I don't want to knock Carrizore at all. I still like Carrizore back there, but every time Enzo's been pressed into duty as a defensive midfielder, he's done really, really well. So it almost feels like that's the best position for him. Jirasi's goal was just, every time he scores, it makes me giggle a little bit. I feel so lucky that we've got him on this team rolling the way he is.
Ted, Dennis pretending to drink the beer, Seiru's goal, Enzo, and I want to throw this one at you too, is Enzo has shown a little bit of scrap in him. Like, he's the guy that needs to be calmed down all the time. And I think every team needs that a little bit. I said this a couple episodes ago, is I think Dennis is the guy that if he's on your club, you love him. But if he's not on your club, the antics maybe you're not a big fan of. So of those three, four comments, which one of those you want to touch on?
Well, I didn't see Dennis with the beer cup, which I'm disappointed. And I'll have to see if I can find that in the highlights somewhere or watch the replay. But yeah, I'll take Enzo as well. I think he's been really impressive, especially for a guy of his size, because he's similar height to Angelo Stiller, but Stiller seems like a beefier guy. And Enzo, we think of, or at least I think of, as being more of a finesse player. He's great with the ball at his feet. He's, he can make the great pass like he made to Seiru for the assist on his goal. But it's impressive to me how well he can still scrap there in the middle of the pitch up against big midfielders from opposing teams.
To me, it was bonkers because we put something out on Twitter about, this lineup's pretty much the same. And then I saw, I think it was Vertical Pass or Ricky Palm said, Ada's out. And I was like, oh, shoot. And I don't think I give credit to them for not, but I was like, this machine has just been going so smoothly. I didn't even recognize that the guy who has started every match and has been a linchpin on our defensive midfield wasn't even there. And that's just the flexibility that Matt, this team has right now, to where you can sit a guy, and we saw it a couple weeks ago with Chris. Now we saw it with Ana. I think there is an organized plan at this point to try to almost practice that a little bit going into next year here. I mean, I agree with what Ted said, is I love Enzo on the pitch. I love Ana on the pitch. You only have 11 guys that can go on the pitch, though. This is a great problem to have as long as you're winning and things are going well here. So what do you think? Enzo starting, Ana sitting, what did you think?
I think I agree with you. I think we're starting to practice this a little bit. And it could be Honus starting to get this into the guys' heads that this is how it's going to be. We're not everybody's going to play all of every game. If you start, that doesn't mean you're rolling the whole time. You might not start next week. And next season, there's going to be a lot more minutes to go around. So shouldn't be an issue of guys being unhappy about not getting playing time. We're going to need all the bodies we can get who can be effective.
Matt, I'm going to put you on the spot here. We actually didn't talk about this before, but the idea of being on the spot and, shoot, I just had a brain fart. What is it you just said?
So there's lots of minutes to go around.
Yeah, I got lost in your eyes again. Darn it. I did that last episode. we do need to make a video of this here. Yeah. All right. Anyway, I'll move on here. The thing I do want to talk about is Alex Neubel. Matt, and I'll start with you on this one, is he didn't do much all game long, but he did two things. One, you could see that he was starting the offense all the time. And he was frustrating the Augsburg players because they're like, oh, crap, we have to go up to this guy to force him to pass it. Two, he didn't have any saves, but the one save he had was just amazing, even though it never counted because of the offside rule. So let's give a little bit of love to Alex, because
he's amazing.
I know.
He's amazing. That's a hard stop. You're absolutely right. He's starting to generate the offense. He's doing a great job distributing, which is something we haven't had from a keeper since ever. He's not just hoofing the ball up the field. He does when he needs to. But that save, too, after having very little to do all game, made a diving one-handed save. That ultimately didn't matter, but the confidence level that that gave, the boost that it gave to the club, the boost it gave to the supporters there, it was, hey, you know what? It doesn't matter that this didn't count. We're not going to let you score anyway. You know, saw it off. What are you going to do about it?
And that's what I loved about that is that the color announcer next to Kevin Hatcher, who I wish I remember his name, I could give credit to it, was effusive in his praise. How, even though that didn't matter because of the offside, about how amazing of a play that was because of exactly what Matt said, the belief it gave the defense, the belief it gave Alex that he could do nothing for 80 some minutes and he could just step up and make that play. I mean, that to me showed me how important that play was. So, I mean, do you have any love to throw out there for Alex? Because they were actually making mention of something we talked about a couple weeks ago about how Bayern might be thinking, you know what, a year or two, we might need a new guy, and that might be the guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also want to throw a little bit of love to Seb and the training staff as well, because from the perspective of starting the offense, we saw a lot of that from Fabian when he comes in too, and we've talked about that on previous pods. And I've got to think then how much of Nubel's development is down to, and how good he's been, how much of that is also down to the coaching that he's receiving, and how much of that is how much he's developed over the course of the season. Is this the same dude who, I mean, granted, he's been spectacular all season with really two exceptions that we can point to, and that's kind of it in a pretty large sample size. So, I mean, just having your number one be able to stand on his head like he does, that gives tremendous confidence to everyone else in the team. And I think that's a huge reason we're at 22 wins this season.
Well, I kind of want to go off topic a little bit here with you, Ted, is that they've mentioned this before, but how all these guys are having these career seasons, right? From Maxi Mittelstadt, who was a serviceable player, now he's on the national team. Valdemar Anton made his national team debut. Seiru Girassi was really not much in the French league and especially the Bundesliga. And now he's having, how much of this is simply Sebastian Hoeneß being, it's really tough, I think, because none of us want to just say there's one person who's in charge, or I shouldn't say that. There's one person who is calling the shots, and that person is the Wizard of Oz, so to speak, who's making everything happen. But is it that simple? I mean, we all loved on this podcast Pellegrino Matarazzo, and he's done some amazing things at Hoffenheim, actually. I mean, they're going to play in the Europa League. But there's just something different with this guy. What is it? I shouldn't say that. What is it? But is it as simple as Sebastian Hoeneß stepped in and he's somehow making these guys from bronze to gold now?
I think he has a very different philosophy from the coaches that we've had. He requires a lot more fluidity and flexibility of his players. And I've got to think that learning, for example, you know, you look at some point in the match, Jamie's best chance that we talked about, he was on the left-hand side and Chris was on the right when that chance took place. And we think of them, you know, they're completely transposed there. And at what point in the match did Seb say, hey, you guys are rotating? You know, was it, I can't think of a breakaway or anything like that that Augsburg had had prior to that that forced them to swap. So I think that that was a tactical decision. And so, and the number of times that he's kicked a center back out wide and had them play out of position, I think he's requiring a lot more of the players, and they're maybe, you know, exercising different parts of their brains than they otherwise would.
That's an interesting thing, Matt, is that when Pellegrino was here, one of the criticisms on Sven and Pellegrino was that they protected the players too much. And we loved, I mean, I think I speak for everybody here that we love Sven, we love Pellegrino. Is it simply that Pellegrino is much more static in his positions on the pitch, whereas Hoeneß is much more fluid, to use Ted's words, going back and forth? Because we talked about this last week where these guys can play all kinds of different positions.
I think Hoeneß does have a much more flexible style. And you know, we didn't see much change in Matarazzo week to week or during the game and how the team lined up and what the plans were. And we've seen a lot more flexibility from Honus. It can also be just a slight change in attitude. Maybe Matarazzo was super protective of the guys, and maybe Honus is a little more honest with them or a little more, you know, brutal and upfront and just, hey, you're not cutting it, or this didn't work well. Let's talk about why. And it could be just a slight tweak to the message. It could even be that they're saying the same thing, but it's a different messenger. You know, Travis, you've coached before. You know how that works. Sometimes there's a kid that responds to your assistant that doesn't respond to you, vice versa. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so many variables, but I think the thing is, Ted said, the stuff that we're seeing with the flexibility and the fluidity of what Honus is doing, I can't imagine that doesn't carry out to training, to locker room. He just seems to be a guy that says, what does the situation require and how can I fit to that to get it done?
The thing that blows me away, though, is how much one-touch passing we're seeing from some of these guys. And some of these guys played for Pellegrino, too, from Hiroki to Anton to some of that. So it is weird. It could just be a case of development, all that stuff. And I think I pretty much can nail this, as I am now a middle school track and field coach. So I'm pretty much right on par with those guys there. So, you know, any last, you know, we got about 30 seconds. Matt, we'll start with you. We'll end with you, Ted. 30 seconds, the match itself, go.
It's great to see this team playing with such confidence and no fear and just go, go, go. And even when the ball's not going in the net like it has been, they don't care. There's no slowdown. There's no stop. Full throttle. It's so much fun to watch.
Ted?
Yeah. The one thing I'll say, and this isn't a shot across the bow on Yes Torup, but he was one of those guys who was mooted to be a coaching candidate for Stuttgart and then ended up going to Augsburg. Mm-hmm. They've been staring European qualification in the face. They've lost four straight matches. You know, not to say that that's completely, you know, in his world, but thank Honus.
Well, how crazy is it? They mentioned that about how they had this like murderer's row where they had Bayer Leverkusen, Bayern Munich, and VfB Stuttgart. I mean, that is such a great place to be. I know. Let's just fist pump this. All right. So speaking of fist pumping, we got some news and cues to dive into in part three. All right. You guys ready for our 10-minute break?
Put us in the penalty box.
All right, so here we go. Part three, news and cues. And like we like to tell everybody, which is sounding like, Matt, a pathetic cry for help. We actually do take a 10-minute break because we can't afford the Zoom upgrade. And we were talking about, Matt, Sebastian Honus and his assistant coaching staff. I mean, do you think one of the reasons why they're so good is he's got such good assistant coaches? And if Sebastian did have to leave, you know, would be in pretty good hands with one of his assistants?
No man is an island. So I think he's got to have somebody helping him out with something. He's obviously setting the tone and setting the direction for things. But it would be really great to think that he's got somebody behind him who's helping out with a lot of stuff. And if Honus gets offered, you know, it's not like there's a bigger job in Europe right now, except maybe Bayer Leverkusen. So if he were to decide to retire unexpectedly, it'd be nice to know that there's somebody who's been involved in our current success who could take over. But I'm not thinking about anything beyond Honus's tenure here right now.
Well, I'm going to go to Ted on this one now because he is a lifelong member, as we glossed over last episode. And I felt terrible about that because that is such an amazing accomplishment. One, I mean, you've got to go there to get your presentation in the stadium. And two, you were mentioning to us that you have actually been watching their kind of behind the scenes episodes on YouTube. Break one of those down. I mean, you're a lifelong member, so we have to listen to whatever you say. I think that's the way it works.
Yes, my soapbox, finally. Especially for those of you, I know several of the listeners are working on practicing their German. So the YouTube show is all in German. I'll warn you of that, but you can use subtitles on it, which I do. And I think it's a great German language training thing. But then it's also for those of us who are NFL fans, akin pretty much to Hard Knocks on HBO, if you remember that. So it's a great behind the scenes with staff, with players, with executives. And you kind of get the scoop prior to matches, after matches, in the locker room, all of that sort of stuff. So there are 9 episodes so far this season. I think I've watched 4 of them, the 4 most recent ones. They've all been fantastic. I think it's episode 6 or episode 7 does an awesome job of showing the relationship between Jamie and Dennis and what good friends those two guys are. They're playing ping pong together and doing all sorts of stuff together off the pitch. So definitely recommend it. It's actually surprisingly really good content. The latest episode was also my first look at the Tunnel Club and all of the stuff that they've done with the stadium. And it does look pretty cool. I still think the voyeurism of looking at players as they go down a tunnel and I don't know, it's very zoo-like, but it's pretty.
Does it get into the, God, I had another brain fart. These 9.5% beers are crushing me. Does it get into it all the, I'm gonna have to edit that out. Damn it. I had a really good question that was in my head, but I can't remember it. All right. Anyway, let's go to birthdays here. We got Genki's birthday, Hiroki's birthday, and Sebastian's birthday. So 33 years old for Genki, 25 years old for Hiroki, 42 years old for Sebastian. So, Matt, any words of wisdom you want to give these guys?
Tylenol is your friend. Get a battery-powered heating pad that you can strap around your waist to help that lower back. And if you haven't started stretching regularly, start now. It is your new life.
Ted, do you have anything for Hiroki, who's 25, since you're the youngest one here?
God, man. Well, I guess you've got 5 more years until you start getting crippling hangovers if you're a drinker, Hiroki, and your friends are going to start telling you you look old, probably also in 5 years.
So I'm having memory loss on this episode, as is clear. Matt's asking for heating pads, and Ted is saying about, boy, this is not. All right. Well, happy birthdays, guys. That's all we're going to say. Here we go. Here's some rumors. So, Matt, we'll start with you. Rumor is Fabian Vollmuth might be going to the board as the sporting director, which means Christian Genner would be going as the director of sports, which I know I'm messing that up. And Leo's purchase option might be purchased because he is on loan from St. Gallen. So which of those do you want to chat about?
Let's buy Leo. Bye, bye, bye. I know his last game wasn't his best, but bye, bye, bye. We need more depth on defense. And he's a solid, solid player.
I'm going to say I'm not too worried about Christian Gettner as the middleman. If Fabian Vollmuth is there and Honus is on the pitch, then Christian Gettner can learn. And I'm okay with that. I know it's not ideal. I know we all want people to come in. But let's not forget that Fabian Vollmuth came from, what was it, Paderborn or something like that, which I don't think is lighting the world on fire. So I think these guys can learn. I know Christian's got a bad reputation, Ted, but I'm okay with Christian there. So which of those 3 stories do you think is a big deal? Vollmuth, Gettner, Leo?
I'll take Vollmuth, and I think it's great. I mean, maybe this is if it's a promotion of sorts, if he feels like it's a promotion, it's a great way for us to keep him around. And he's shown himself to be incredibly competent in the roles he's taken on thus far. So I'd love for us to be able to retain his services. And if this is what it takes to do, I'm good with that. Maybe he can quiet down some of the craziness that's happening on the board in the meantime as well.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because if you go on Transfermarkt, which is a great website to kind of get some history and some data, sporting director and director of sport are interchangeable. So one of them is going to get moved up to the board, which would be Vollmuth. And then one of them would be on the pitch, would in theory would be Gettner based on this. I mean, who knows it's what's going to happen. As long as Femi Volgamut and Sebastian Honus are there, I'm pretty confident in what's going to happen. Let's go to the other confidence here is a bracket of significance. So here we go. So Seiru and Valdi were named to the Bundesliga team of the season. So congratulations to both those guys. But unfortunately, in the bigger deal, they faced off against each other in our bracket of significance. Seiru won. Ted, what do you think the percentage was that he was able to win over Valdi?
So I'll say I actually picked Valdi in this one. Ooh. So I think that it might be fairly close. What can you tell us the result, Travis?
It was 80% for Seiru, which I understand. But it's tough because it's a bracket of significance. But Valdi was on the team before when we weren't very good. And Seiru has been on the team when we are very good. So I get that. So Matt Angelo was over Maxi, Chris over Joshua, and Dennis over Hiroki. So Chris, 97% over Joshua, which I think all of us would agree with. Dennis was 75% over Hiroki, which I think maybe we could have a debate on that. But here's the one I want you to talk about is Angelo was 54% over Maxi. So that was super close. I agree with this. I voted for Angelo. I'm going to have a tough time voting against Angelo. What about you?
Maxi has the moniker of Maximilian Fiddlesticks around these parts, which I think is unbeatable. So, Stiller love you, but come on, Fiddlesticks.
That's pretty good.
This one's really interesting because both of these guys are new to the team. So there isn't the sort of history, like the emotional vote that we had with Silas. So it's really interesting. I think Mittelstadt, I don't know, Mittelstadt's a little more my guy here because Enzo has shown that he can play that defensive mid role. So we've got three guys that can do that. We don't have another, I mean, Ito can slide over and play left back, but it changes the shape of our defense because it's more like we've got three center backs. So it's a really tough one. I think I would go with Mittelstadt just because he's more of a unique force on this team, but I mean, Stiller's been such an amazing ball mover for us that it's hard to vote against him. It's great to have a difficult decision.
Yeah, Ted, you texted Matt and I early in the week about how difficult this decision was. Who did you end up picking in this one?
You're tearing our family apart, Travis. We're all just trying to enjoy this season and you come in as an overbearing father and just rip it all apart.
It's I want tragic. It all to come back to me.
I picked Angelo in this one, but as Matt talks it over, there's a reason this one was 54 to 46. That one, it's a coin flip. And they both really, the offense moves through both of them in different matches. Going back to the fluidity piece, I think Honus is so good about picking how we play strategically against different opponents. Maxi is awesome with, the overlaps with Chris on the wings in some games. And then other games, like against Augsburg, it's getting channeled through the middle. And Angelo's a key player there.
I know it's tough. So Ted, it's the final four is Seiru versus Angelo, Chris versus Dennis. Now it's not the player of the season, which I think we'd all agree it's Seiru, right? No, it's a player of significance and the most significant player for this team. So I think that adds a little bit of an element here. I think this may end the way we all think it's going to end, but I am going to struggle with the Seiru versus Angelo and the Chris versus Dennis, Ted.
I am going to struggle with it, but I think the writing is on the wall. We end up with our Dennis Seiru, grudge match, the two of them. And that just seems crazy to even think about those two being opponents in any way because they seem to love each other so much.
All right, Matt. Who are you giving most of your love to, though?
I'm with you guys. I think we got to say Gerassi. The biggest issue this team has had for the last 10 years has been putting the ball in the back of the net, with the exception of Simone Tirota's 16-17 season in the second division we were talking about earlier. Every other year, we can't score. And all of a sudden this year, we're scoring in buckets, and it's mostly because of Girassi, but Undav and Furich have been chipping in a lot, and it shows. That's why those are three of our four finalists.
Somewhere, somehow, Martin Harnik is listening to this and he is not happy with your comments on this.
He's seeing how he feels in green and gold because he's going to get drafted by the Green Bay Packers.
Oh boy.
Matt, your comments were over the top, much like Martin Harnik shot.
Yes, well done.
When did this turn into a Martin Harnik Tom Brady roast? When did that happen? We're sorry, Martin. I'd actually like to meet you in person, but we know that will never happen if you listen to any of this, which you probably haven't. All right, let's dive into some questions. So David says, no questions. I just want to savor the moment and enjoy it while we can. We're guaranteed a top three finish and we'll be playing the Champions League next year. And to think this time a year ago, we were fretting over relegation, just going to sit back and relish it a bit. I'm actually going to transition this question a little bit, Matt, into thinking about our friends from Cologne. Those guys are in a rough spot. They had a great win, and then, boy, Dortmund kind of pooped the bed. What a difference a year makes, right?
Yeah, Dortmund. We've talked about my buddy Felix before. He's a big Dortmund fan. And his classic saying of Dortmund is, if they can find a way to screw it up, they will. But not until after they've given you the expectation that they're finally not going to do it this year. as much as a bomb last week, I want to draw some attention to Wolfsburg. So I'm going to derail your question here. Ooh. Wolfsburg, you had one job. It was not to lose to Bayern so that we could stay in second place. Wolfsburg had been on a roll. They'd been playing super well. I got a hold of my buddy who's a big Wolfsburg fan. I said, am I having false hope? He goes, no, I'm feeling really good. After you guys took Bayern apart, I feel like we can hang with them. We're at least going to get a draw. And they let us all down.
Yeah, well, at least they let us down within 20 minutes. That game was over almost before it started. So, Ted, you and I were in Austin, and we met a bunch of Cologne supporters. So, do want to give a little shout out to those guys. I mean, it was awesome they had to come from behind win against Union, but then that Dortmund performance, if you can call it that, those guys are in a rough spot this weekend.
Yeah, they totally let Mainz off the hook and really were done no favors. But, you know, this is one of those tough things where if you don't keep your destiny in your own hands, you end up in this sort of circumstance. And they are, unfortunately, again next weekend, reliant on someone else to do the job for them, which you hate to see. I hope that the late winner that they got this weekend was like Legendo part one for them, and that there is a part two to it next weekend. But I think even if they win, best case scenario is they're in the relegation, I think, right?
Right. Yeah, they're in a rough spot, but if anybody knows about rough spots, it's us. So we're giving you some positive vibes. We've been there before, so hopefully you guys can pull it out. Shumi fan sends in, what are the chances Stuttgart finishes above Bayern in the standings? Ted, I don't think they do at all. They're at Hoffenheim. Hoffenheim is fighting for, you know, Europa play, but boy, oh boy, Bayern has nothing else to play for. So I bet they're just going to curb stomp these guys.
This is the same Hoffenheim that won 6-0 today, though. Granted, against Darmstadt. That gives me a little bit of hope. I wish this is one of those Hoffenheim plays so much better on the road than they play at home, just because it's a plastic town. I wish this one was at the Allianz. Then I would feel a little bit more confident. Unfortunately, I think we're probably sticking in third place, but Pellegrino, man, who knows? He's looking out for us, I think.
That's two things. One, Matt, Ted said, unfortunately, you know, in third place. How awesome is that sentence? And number two, he mentioned something you said last week, is Pellegrino knows how to play against Bayern. So maybe I'm crazier. I mean, he's gotten some results against those guys.
He seems to have an idea of how to beat Bayern in his head. His team recently discovered that they know how to score goals and that you're allowed to score more than one goal in a game. which is exciting. Bayern has, as Ted mentioned, nothing left to play for. And we saw, I think, part of the Dortmund game that I was just bagging on them for. They're in the Champions League final. They just had a huge emotional win to get to that final, and then they had to come back and play a meaningless to them game against Mainz. So whatever, you know, Bayern may be in that. It's been a long, tough, not good by their standards, which is ridiculous. They've got 72 points and they're in second place. But there's all the turmoil in the front office. Things, they seem to be a team in chaos right now. I could see them all just, the players kind of being over it, and Hoffenheim showing up and going, you know what, we're going to stick our finger in the eye of the Bavarian Giants and try and get ourselves into European play, and sticking it to them. And that could be our ticket to second place, which would be amazing.
Yeah. I kind of want the whole dynamic of Bayern sneaks to just, everybody shut up. They're having a really good season. It's just Bayer Leverkusen is having a historic season. They finished, they were in the final four of the Champions League. They're, if not for Leverkusen having this crazy season, they'd be one game away from winning the Bundesliga. Sure, they blew against Saarbrücken, but everybody lost against Saarbrücken this year. So it's like, you know, everybody calm down a little bit if you're a Bayern Munich fan, for, you know, if you're listening to this podcast for whatever reason. Let's do some rapid fire questions with Balham here. So Ted, start with you. My question to you guys, Chris's 70-minute sub seems kind of Pellegrino Matarazzo-ish. What do you think about that? 70 minutes, very much on the clock the last 3-4 matches.
Yeah, that seems to be almost, it's almost like he's got a pitch clock or a pitch count sort of thing or something like that. And they're just trying to, maybe it's accumulation of fatigue over the course of a season, something like that. And, you know, we saw him left out against Werder Bremen. So I've got to think it's something along those lines where Seb just knows this guy, he just needs to make it through the season. And in order to do that, you know, we're pulling him the first opportunity after 70 minutes in a match.
Matt, is he like a major league pitcher who can pitch like 4 or 5 innings and that's it with him now? Is he just gassed out? Is it as simple as that?
He might be trying to save some wear and tear for the upcoming Euros, because he's going to be on the national team. So it could just be Honus saying, you know, hey, you've had a phenomenal season. You've achieved all your goals. You made it to the big stage. Let's give you lots of time, but also not completely blow you out in the last couple weeks of the season. And we've got some other guys who have deserved minutes. So it makes sense.
All right. Have Jeff and Austin retired from Valpi Americana? Yes. But let's talk a little bit. We already talked about Cologne, Matt. Let's talk about Christian Streich. Give him a little bit of love from Freiburg. Like, as we've been supporters, he's been in the league. He's been consistent, yelling at people. I mean, I know there's some people that aren't big fans of him, but I don't know. I am.
Streich has been one of these guys that you keep wondering how he's doing as well as he's doing. He didn't ever seem to be getting a lot of resources, but his team's always played well. They played disciplined, consistent, not mind-numbingly unattractive football. And so he's one of those guys that I just would look at and go, oh, I wish we could have that kind of coaching stability.
Yeah, Ted, there are not a few times in the dark times of being a Stuttgart supporter where I was like, you know what? My family lived close to Freiburg. I could have been a Freiburg supporter. I'm not afraid to admit that here. Any love for Freiburg and Streich in this one? Because he's been kind of the Mount Rushmore of the Bundesliga the last, 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah, this dude's been super impressive. When I first started rooting for the Bundesliga, I don't believe that Freiburg was anywhere close to sniffing top division. So for him to have, not only for the team to have gotten up there, but to have the sustained level of success that they had, and not just, you know, Augsburg level where it's like, okay, they've figured out how to stay middle of the table and just stay up. For the fact that they qualified for Europe is pretty incredible. You know, they generated enough money to build a whole new stadium. So I think his time there it's safe to say has, you could argue it's been transformative for that club. So I think he leaves behind a really fantastic legacy. Freiburg's a nice town. I think it is across the border, the Baden, the Badisch versus Swabish thing, though, I think, right? So
technically it's Baden, yeah.
We may be straying too far into say in these platitudes for them.
Yeah, F you. So speaking of F you, Ted, Matt got some love from Vertical Pass, which is one of the big websites, blogs in Stuttgart for Val Bay. So should he be overwhelmed? Is he getting too big for his britches, Ted? I mean, should we just mute him at this point?
I think so. Is there a way to just kick him out when we get to the next break? I've got to admit, I was a little jealous when I saw that on Twitter.
I know.
Yeah. But Matt, it's well earned. Kudos.
It took me
got a good head on your shoulders, guy.
It took me 2 days to realize they had actually cut a segment of our podcast. And I was like, oh, cool. It must be me. And then I listened. I was like, that's not me. That's Matt. So Matt, here's your moment to shine, buddy. Are you overwhelmed? Are you, what's going on? How many people are knocking at your door now?
Absolutely nobody is knocking at my door. When you guys texted me to let me know that this was happening, I was pretty astonished. I got home from work that night and I told my wife, hey, this thing happened. And she looked at me like, so? So she does a good job of making sure that I don't get too big for my britches. It is flattering. It makes me wonder if they actually listened to more than just whatever, like maybe they clipped a random segment out and went, yeah, this will be fine. Nobody's paying attention to these idiots anyway.
That is pretty accurate to everything that exists. The I'm sorry, that is gonna take me a minute to get back from. The Augsburg is creating a Dortmund level kit this year where they're allowing the fans to create the jersey. So do you think Stuttgart will do this, is what Mom's asking. And what would your ideas be? Do you like buttons, jerseys, collars? And would you design an Augsburg shirt? Matt, I love a collar. I love the idea of a collared shirt. They had the red shirt when Simon Terodde was on the club. And there was the buttons. It wasn't a collar. It was kind of a mock thing. I would love some kind of collar there. What about you? What would you like? And then what would you design?
I would design something that looked incredibly amateurish and like a 7-year-old put it together, because that's about my level of art skills. I don't know. I'm hit and miss on the collars. I think they look sharp on the players on the pitch, but I don't know that I would buy one with a collar because I feel like I put it on and I look like a doofus. But that's probably more of a me problem than a problem with the shirt. I just want a black polo shirt. I know I'm banging on about this. It's just a black polo shirt.
I'm getting tired of talking to this guy. He's getting quoted on Twitter. Everybody loves him. Ted, bring him
Vertical
back.
Pass, if you're listening, just a black polo shirt.
That's right. So, Ted, what would be your design for a shirt? And are you pro collar, button? What are your thoughts?
Here's an idea. I would make it look like the inside of a cabbage. Didn't we already do this? no, but I'm team collar. My first Vauf Bay kit ever was the 2000-2001 kit, back when Debutel was the sponsor. And I had the home kit. It had the Brustring and it had gray sleeves. Adidas was our kit maker at the time. So this is way back, but it had a really nice collar. And the best thing about it was, if any of our other listeners went to Catholic school and had a dress code, this was the cheat code, in that all we had to have a collar on our shirt. And so I was able to wear a soccer jersey to school when everyone else, all the other suckers, were in a polo shirt or a button down or something like that. And I showed up at least one day a week in my Vauf Bay kit. So collar all day. Bad. Buttons, I don't know about that, but definitely collar.
So I love the collared button shirt. So where the collar is buttoned down, because I read a GQ article a while back about how the quarter zip is the new dress code. And so now I bought a bunch of quarter zips on Amazon for like $10. And I need a shirt to wear under them. So it's that I'm wearing every single day my 2014, 2015 collared Stuttgart kit from my Martin Harnik time. So there you go.
Love it.
I'm pro collar now just because it helps school kids circumvent stupid rules, and it's something that professionals can wear underneath quarter zips. I'm all on board with collar town now.
Screw the man.
Yeah, that's right.
Collar jerseys.
So Ted, will you watch the Champions League final between Real Madrid and Dortmund? I mean, I'm going to. I'm fully convinced that Real Madrid will lose to Dortmund, but Dortmund will lose to Darmstadt next week. What about you?
I will definitely be watching, and I'm looking forward to it. Dortmund just kind of seems like a team of destiny this year in the Champions League. I would love nothing more than to see them beat 14-time champion Real Madrid, especially when, despite them consistently proving their doubters wrong, there are still so many people doubting this Dortmund team. And I'm not just saying that because my other friends are Dortmund people.
Matt, I think Ted's right. It's like, it's really easy to doubt this Dortmund team because they're lousy. They are all, and your buddy, he has to know, is like, they can't show up for a Bundesliga match, but then all of a sudden they're performing in the biggest match in the world. I would pick Real Madrid, which I'm sure is the easy bet in this one, but I wouldn't be shocked, and I will be rooting for Dortmund and their ridiculous performance. I mean, what do you got? Are you going to watch the match? And then what do you think?
I'm going to try and watch it. I'm definitely rooting for Dortmund for a couple of reasons. One is I'm tired of Real Madrid winning things in the big stage. But two, the game is in London. And this is maybe a little bit off and weird, but the English love to refer to the Bundesliga as a farmers league and talk smack about it. And I'm a little bummed out that it's not an all Bundesliga Champions League final for this reason. But it would be great if a Bundesliga team won Europa League, if a Bundesliga team won Champions League, and the Bundesliga is just rolling and England has Manchester City for the fourth year in a row winning their league, which is what they've always knocked us for, is, oh, Bayern always wins it because everybody else is terrible. Well, we could shove this all right back in the Premier League's face. So go Dortmund, yellow wall all the way, make it happen. It would be phenomenal for the Bundesliga to take this home.
It would be amazing season for them that they get blown out by Mainz and yet they beat Real Madrid. So good for you. Go for it. And Baham's last question is, can Stuttgart win their last match versus Gladbach? Great segue. Let's jump into part four. Stuttgart hosting Gladbach. So Gladbach has had a rough season. They just drew against Eintracht Frankfurt. They're 13th on the table, minus seven goal diff. They don't have anything to play for, Matt. Their season is done. They just secured survival. So, Matt, when I say Gladbach to you, to me, it's a historic club who is always good. Fabian Favre, I think, is the guy who I always think of. But they've been not so great for a while. What goes through your mind when you think of, oh, the Foles are showing up?
Gladbach feels like a boogeyman team for us, like somebody that we should regularly beat, and we just don't for no discernible reason. So I normally, when I see them on the schedule, I get a little concerned because who knows? But I have no concern this year. We're so good. We've been playing so well against everybody. And like you said, their season's done. They just need to get out of it without anybody getting significant injuries. I'm all Stuttgart on this game.
Ted, we are 9-5-11 in our last 25. We lost to them 3-1 earlier in January. They scored a first-minute goal and something like 19 seconds in the match. Then they were up 2-0 within 18 minutes. Joshua did get us back. The funny thing is we dominated the stats. We had 70% possession. We had 15 shots to their eight. We had 2xG to their barely under one. But that was Seiru, Silas, Wu, and Hiroki were out at that point playing for their national teams. I mean, that's the background, as Matt is mentioning. I mean, when I say Gladbach to you, what do you think, and what do you think going forward?
These guys are a big team. They're one of the others in Germany, I think, that also has 100,000 members. So these guys, tradition, they go way back. My brother lives in Nordrhein-Westfalen. These guys are one of the, probably, aside from Cologne, probably the closest team to where my brother lives. And he's in this small little village, and there is a massive Mönchengladbach fan. There are a lot of them, and they've like graffitied all over the town. There's all sorts of stuff painted in green and black. So when I think of Mönchengladbach, I think of my brother taking all of the stickers that we got at the Stuttgart Mönchengladbach match last season, and he's peppering them all over his little village to mess with all of the local Gladbach fans. So that's what I think of. Go, Andrew.
I'm curious what all these poor Gladbach supporters are like. Where did all this red and white come from? What is happening here? It's funny because we go back in time. It was January 14th, January 20th. We had lost to Gladbach 3-1, and then we lost to Bochum the next match, and we had Leipzig coming up. And we all know how this is going to end. Ted, we end up blowing Leipzig out, and everything goes ahead. But those two matches were kind of pivotal to where we thought, okay, we overperformed. And then here we are.
Yeah, and it was the start of the Rückrunde. So it's like, okay, was the Hinrunde just a flash in the pan? You know, did we build all of this momentum, and then the winter break and all of this, you know, the international duties sapped it away? And then, yeah, that Leipzig match just totally blew the doors off.
Right. And Matt, you said this before, is that at some point, we're not lucky. We're good. We are actually good. I think you were one of the first people I talked to. Just like, we're not just lucky. We're actually a pretty good team. I mean, were you, I was very concerned. I was exactly what Ted said, is I thought, okay, we overperformed and now we're coming back to reality and we'll just hang on. Kind of like some of these other clubs did, but what were your thoughts in January versus, you know, kind of where we're at now?
Even in January, I felt like we could put it back together. Like it was just a little bit of a speed bump, but also it was like, if it wasn't, if we're going to tumble, we had a phenomenal Rückrunde or Hinrunde. And like, what's the worst that can happen? We scored so many points in the first half that we're probably not going to have to worry about relegation. So like, all right, it's going to be less fun than it was, but we still won't have the panic of relegation. So I had decided already that the season was a success and whatever happened, happened. And I wasn't going to worry too much about it. But boy, was it delightful that they went, oh, hey, wait, we're really good. We can do this, and picked it back up.
All right, Ted, I'm going to stop listening to Matt, because all Vertical Pass is going to do is just record his comments here. So I'm tired of listening to him. So going to this match, it's a home match. We've got a full healthy roster. What do you think the score is going to be? What do you think the betting odds have to be? Winamax, all that stuff. What do you got?
I'm guessing they got us maybe by a goal and a half. Is that too generous?
That is bingo, bingo, bingo. I've never seen a Stuttgart game this high up. They've got us by a goal and a half, which makes sense. Gladbach has got nothing to play for. We're at home. I mean, we have been predicting 3-4-0 the last couple matches. What do you got?
I'm going to ride this momentum then. I'm going 4-0 with a four pack from Seiru to get him to 30 goals on the season. Why not?
Matt, Vertical Pass is listening. What do you say?
I'm with Ted. 4-0. Let's go.
I think this is going to actually be a close one. I think it's going to be like 7-0 is what I think in this one. I think it'll be like I don't know what it's going to be. I think it'll be like 2-0 or 4-0. I want Seiru to get a goal. I want Dennis to go. I want Ada Carazor to get a goal. I want to see Andre Chase get on the pitch. I want to see Genki Haraguchi get on the pitch. I just, this dude has been a great teammate. For him to be in the lineup slash bench all these matches tells me he's a great teammate. I would love to see him for what is probably his last match to get on the pitch a little bit. I'm curious, Matt, do you think people rush the pitch? Because 2 weeks ago I said they will. I don't know if they will now. I think it'll be a respectful, like, everybody goes bonkers.
I think a pitch rush is a little not quite called for in this situation. Like, it's a historic season. It's the most points we've ever scored, the most wins we've ever had in a season. No question. If people storm the pitch, yeah, great. But also, we're third. So, like, let's have a touch of reality here.
Yeah, Ted, hopefully they record Matt saying that. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with Matt. I think what we might get is someone like a Captain Anton or somebody that goes up into the curve and chats with the fans.
I 100% hope exactly what you said, is that it is a ESPN Plus extended just coverage of what is going to happen. Because I think exactly what you said is that the place is going to go bonkers. Nobody's going to leave. The players are going to go up in the stands. They're going to go around the pitch. It's just going to be awesome. So this has been an awesome season. It's been just amazing what happened. We got about 20 seconds left. So, Tana, I'll let you go. Last words.
So they announced a summer trip to Japan. They're doing matches in Kyoto and Hiroshima. Kids, family, all of that stuff aside, if you didn't have any externalities, would you guys go?
No. Yes. I would. Matt?
In a heartbeat. No question.
Same right here.
Right. So when you see me put my kids and wife and family up on eBay soon, we'll see how that goes. All right, we got about 20 seconds left. Matt, any last words?
I'm looking forward to the game, looking forward to another win. Phenomenal season. So excited to watch this thing wrap up.
Ted, 10 seconds.
4-0, baby. Let's do it.
All right, guys. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Hopefully next week we talk to you after another big win, but this time at home against Gladbach. Thanks, guys.
Most of the Stuttgart fans are going to be tucking into the Mauertaschen with glee tonight. If you're wondering what a Mauertasche is, it's a culinary speciality of this region. Southwestern German dumpling. If you're not a fan of Mauertaschen, then always look for Spätzle, which is the southwestern German variety of pasta. I must confess to being a bit more of a Spätzle man myself. But do give the Mauertaschen a try if you come here.